morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bonganyi in Washington. Today is Friday, June the 17th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. The East African Community lawmakers have hailed the deployment of the standby forces in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo.
Congo is one of our partner states. It is actually in the process of ratifying and submitting the instruments of ratification. So in that context, we need peace in East Africa region.
A Ugandan legislator says police had no legal basis to arrest and jail four-time presidential candidate Dr. Kizza Besigye.
It was an embarrassing situation. People got annoyed in court, and that was not enough. As we got out of court, eight of the activists who were in court was arrested, and the child was shouting in court, the government.
In Malawi, rights groups have submitted a joint complaint to the African Committee of Experts on the Rights and Welfare of the Child over the poor implementation of anti-trafficking legislation. We'll have those stories plus sports coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Stay tuned. And for our top story, the East African Community lawmakers have hailed the deployment of the standby forces in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. This comes after Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta issued a statement calling for the immediate deployment of the standby force to help neutralize armed groups in the region. Moses Havyarimana has more.
The East African Legislative Assembly hailed President Uhuru Kenyatta's move to deploy an East African standby force in the Eastern DRC. Its aim would be to restore peace and stability in Bunagana. The town in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo has been captured by the M23 rebels. Gideon Gatpan is a lawmaker from South Sudan.
Congo is one of our partner states. It is actually in the process of ratifying and submitting the instruments of ratification. So in that context, we need peace in East Africa region. And to bring peace, when it is necessary to use force to be able to protect civilians and bring sanity in the region, then we are for it.
On Wednesday, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta called for an immediate cessation of hostilities in the Eastern DRC and for all armed groups, both foreign and local, to lay down arms. He also called for the activation of the East African Regional Force under the auspice of East African Community. George Odong is a lawmaker from Uganda.
East African Community needs to demonstrate capacity to deal with contradictions arising from differences either between partner states. The community needs to come out very, very strongly, and I'm happy that the chair of summit has taken that decision. It's long overdue.
East African leaders directed all foreign armed groups in the Democratic Republic of Congo to be disarmed and to return unconditionally and immediately to their respective countries of origin. They said that failure to do so, these groups would be considered as negative or hostile forces and handled militarily by the region. Paul Musamali is a lawmaker from Uganda. He says that the move should serve as a platform for solving future crises in the region.
We have been having a problem in terms of response as East Africa. It's a welcome move. We also don't want this matter to only stop at M23, but to use this also as a platform for addressing potential conflicts in East Africa.
Early this week, the M23 rebel group captured Bunagana City. The Kenyan president, who is currently the chair of the Heads of State Summit, called for the declaration of Ituri, North Kivu and South Kivu provinces as weapons-free zones. If deployed, this will be the first time for a former East African army to be called to duty. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Arusha, Tanzania.
Political parties, independent aspirants and the civil society are questioning Kenya's electoral body of its preparedness to conduct the country's August 9th general election. These concerns come a few days after the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission selected polling stations identified for the testing of a new results transmission system. More than half of the selected polling stations failed, and now the commission is blaming the internet service providers and Kenya's Communications Authority for the mess. Maureen Ojambo has more on this story.
The results of a test by Kenya's Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, IEBC, in the simulation exercise conducted last week were not good. They showed a 59% failure of the testing of a new results transmission system. This has led to many politicians and civil society groups to doubt the commission's readiness to conduct the general election less than 2 months away. Felix Odhiambo is the executive director at the Electoral Law and Governance Institute for Africa. He says the commission should address the concerns of concerned parties before certifying and publishing the voters' list.
A clean, accurate, complete voters' register is an integral component of a credible, peaceful, free and fair electoral process, and we therefore urge the commission to move with speed to address these allegations. Make public the report of the investigations into the claims of these illegal transfers and culprits brought to book.
The commission's chairperson, Wafula Chebukati, had earlier admitted that they had a problem with the voters' list, with most of the participants registering more than once. It is also an offense in Kenya to campaign using public resources. Politicians, especially those allied to the Deputy President William Ruto, claim that civil servants, including cabinet secretaries, are using public resources to campaign for former Prime Minister Raila Odinga. He, in turn, is receiving backing from President Uhuru Kenyatta. Sheila Masinde is the executive director at Transparency International Kenya.
Section 15(1) states that a public officer shall take all reasonable steps to ensure that property that is entrusted to his or her care is adequately protected and not misused or misappropriated. This applies to the diversion of public resources to further the political campaign of an individual. We call upon public servants to refrain from this behavior and implore on relevant government bodies to hold these public servants to account and deter these actions of impunity.
The Electoral Commission has received a report from the Communications Authority showing that 98% of the country is connected to the internet. But the IEBC says the report generated via desktop analysis may not translate to physical coverage on the ground. IEBC Commissioner Abdi Gulie says that the electoral body is not satisfied with the report by the Communications Authority of Kenya.
1,111 polling centers are out of the 3G/4G network. So as a country, it is expected that we will be going to the election with some centers that will not be able to transmit results at the polling station as required.
During the simulation exercise conducted by the electoral body in Nairobi, only 1,200 out of the 2,900 polling stations successfully transmitted data. Poor internet connectivity was among the reasons that led to the annulment of the presidential election in 2017, when 11,000 polling stations failed to transmit results. There are more than 45,000 polling stations in Kenya. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojambo in Sacramento, California.
A last-minute injunction by the European Court of Human Rights on Tuesday halted the transfer of the first batch of migrants from the UK to Rwanda. However, both countries say they remain committed to the UK-Rwanda Migration and Economic Development Partnership despite legal challenges. From Kigali, Diana Iriza has this story.
Rwanda and the United Kingdom announced a major partnership under which the former will receive migrants and asylum seekers from the UK. The East African country aims to offer a solution to a broken global asylum system that is being exploited by human traffickers. With seven migrants on board, the European Court of Human Rights Tuesday evening caused a delay in the transfer of migrants and asylum seekers from the UK to Rwanda following the approval of a last-minute injunction. Rwandan residents commented on the cancellation of what was supposed to be the first flight from the UK carrying migrants to Rwanda.
As a Rwandan, the cancellation is not a big deal to me. I think my country offered a solution. They took a stand. So if the process and procedures of other parties block the partnership, that's not our problem. At least we offered a solution. But I think in the end, the arrangement will go through.
I also believe that others who will be willing to come to Rwanda will come to open arms and have their lives restarted and achieve bigger things, because we have had examples of immigrants and asylum seekers or even refugees who have built their lives from scratch.
The policy has been branded immoral by British church leaders and criticized by the United Nations. The Rwanda government says it remains ready to receive the migrants when they do arrive. Rwanda had taken in close to 1,000 migrants who were stranded in Libya for resettlement in Rwanda. A majority managed to relocate to other countries. I'm Diana Iriza for VOA Daybreak Africa in Kigali, Rwanda.
The ongoing drought devastating the Horn of Africa has hit Somalia the hardest, with an estimated one half of its 16 million people facing crisis-level food insecurity. Aid groups say hundreds of thousands of Somalis are at risk of starving to death, while hundreds of children are already dying of malnutrition. From Somalia's capital, Mogadishu, Mohamed Sheikh Nuh has more.
At the Center for Malnourished Children in Mogadishu, 30-year-old Fadume Madi holds her bony 4-year-old child. Madi fled hunger in Bulagadud village in Somalia's southern Bay region on June 11 after three of her children died. She now lives in Al Hidayah Camp for Internally Displaced People, IDP, with her three remaining children. Madi says before the drought, they had livestock and farms that grew crops, but the drought destroyed them all at once. She says three children died from malnutrition. The child on her lap says Madi is suffering severe malnutrition because of the ongoing hunger crisis. The UN says about 800,000 Somalis have been displaced by the record drought. Paris-based aid group Action Against Hunger runs the Horden Stabilization Center, which serves poor women and families living in IDB camps. She's also at the center to get emergency food aid for her withered children. Aden says the drought destroyed all their crops, killed all their animals, and left all seven of her kids malnourished. She says they cannot grow crops and their livestock have died. The situation for our children, says Aden, as well as ourselves, is that our lives are in danger. My God be with us, she adds. While many rural families fleeing drought see Mogadishu as their only hope, the Somali capitalist hospitals are overwhelmed. The supervisor of Martino Hospitalis Malnutrition Ward, Dr. Abdirizak Yusuf, says there is a shortage of high nutrition food to treat the children. Yusuf says malnourished children must be given a therapeutic diet, such as high nutrition milk for required vital strength. He says the supplies that were donated by the United Nations are already depleted. Meanwhile, at Al Hidayah IDB camp just outside Mogadishu, mothers and young children wait outside their makeshift shelters for help. Camp caretaker Nadifa Hussein says hundreds of people in need are arriving every week. She says every day 10 vans with displaced people can arrive. The next day, 4. Other days, they have no arrivals. Every day has its own challenges, says Hussein. There is always something different. She says you can see families dropped by vehicles all day, and they walk to this camp. That is the reality here. Aid groups say the Somali government lacks the capacity to deal with the worst drought to hit the Horn of Africa in decades. And without more food soon, the UN says this year more than 7 million Somalis will be in crisis, and 1.5 million children will face acute hunger. Mohamed Sheikh Nuh for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. A member of Uganda's parliament says police had no legal basis to arrest and jail four-time presidential candidate Dr. Kizza Besigye. Francis Mwijuche says Dr. Besigye, currently leader of the People's Front for Transition, has a constitutional right to organize people to protest. Police first arrested Dr. Besigye on May the 22nd for disrupting business, traffic, and for inciting violence as he tried to mobilize ordinary Ugandans to join him in protesting the high cost of living. He was released on bail but rearrested on June the 14th for inciting violence. Like most countries globally, Uganda is experiencing rising fuel, energy, and food costs. From Kampala, parliamentarian Mwijuche tells VOA's James Barty that there's nothing criminal about Dr. Besigye calling on Ugandans to protest rising prices. He says the charges are trumped up and designed to keep Dr. Besigye away from the public.
Well, he was arrested yesterday and unfortunately brought and produced in court at 5:40 Ugandan time. And this is way after court supposed to have closed at 5. So he's produced in court the time of closure of court. And the magistrate appears and reads the charges and says the lawyers of Dr. Westley cannot say anything because it is late. And then you wonder, if it was late, why did even court sit? Why wouldn't you tell police that you cannot produce him in court because it is late? And so the magistrate had even insulted the lawyers of Dr. Westley and shut them down. He said, no, shut down, you can't speak. An officer of court, a lawyer, now a magistrate, becomes a politician, becomes an activist in court. It was an embarrassing situation. People got annoyed in court. And that was not enough, as we got out of court, 8 of the activists who were in court was arrested and charged with shouting in court, the government.
Let me say that the police said Dr. Besigye was arrested for disrupting traffic, business, and also for inciting violence.
But you see, you cannot say I have incited violence where there has not been violence. First of all, Dr. Besigye has a right to speak, has a right to associate, has a right to mobilize people against the regime. So even if I was calling people to demonstrate, you cannot say my calling people to demonstrate is criminal, is an offense. Because in Uganda, police will never allow you to demonstrate. They have actually, they used to use the famous Public Order Management Act, which was actually challenged and defeated in court, but they still continue to illegally arrest people, charge them with incitement to violence as a way of deterring Ugandans from demonstration. So I think these are charges that are prompted for purposes of having him out of the community and keeping him in prison because government is scared to its knees because of what is happening in the country. The anger in the public is what is scaring the government.
The protest Dr. Besigye was leading was about the high cost of living in Uganda. The government of President Museveni has this week released a budget that it says is intended to bring about socio-economic transformation for Ugandans.
Well, I am a member of parliament myself. I was involved in the processing of that budget. But I can tell you, most money is into the defense budget, buying more tear gas, and dealing with how do we fail Ugandans from rising up. So much of the money is into the defense budget rather than into service delivery. So at the end of the day, the money is spent on regime survival. And for me, that is really what puts us to shame as a country.
Thank you so much again. It's so nice to talk with you.
You're most welcome.
Francis Mwijuche is a member of parliament and a member of the People's Front for Transition, a group led by Dr. Kizza Besigye. He was speaking from Kampala with VOA's James Barty. In Malawi, rights groups have submitted a joint complaint to the African Committee of Experts on the Rights and Welfare of the Child over the poor implementation of anti-trafficking legislation. The local NGO, People Serving Girls at Risk, and the international women's rights organization, Equality Now, say that the country's criminal justice system is failing to handle cases of abuse. Lamek Masina has more from Blantyre.
The rights groups issued the complaints as part of activities marking the commemoration of the Day of African Child, which falls on June 16. Yvonne Anyango Oyeke is a program officer on End Sexual Exploitation at International NGO Equality Now.
The basis of our complaint against the government of Malawi is that we've noted failure on their part to ensure that perpetrators of trafficking are held accountable, and thus are complicit in ensuring that women and girls, and in this case specifically girls, who experience sexual exploitation and who experience trafficking for sexual exploitation are denied access to justice.
The rights group cites the delay of a case of a 16-year-old girl in rural Malawi they call Maggie. She was ruled from her village with a false promise of legitimate work and trafficked into prostitution inside the country. The statement says Maggie's legal case has been ongoing for over 4 years and has been beset by delays and mishandling by the state actors, including police, prosecutors, magistrates, and others in the criminal justice chain. Onyeke says lack of progress in her case, which is still in the pre-trial stages, demonstrates systematic failings experienced by victims of sex trafficking in Malawi.
The impact of these issues on the rights of the children concerned, we do note that victim survivors of exploitation have physical manifestations of the trauma that they have gone through, therefore should be dealt with expeditiously.
The NGOs observe that the delays in handling cases contradict articles of the African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of the Children. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
And now it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports. With that, we go to Abuja, Nigeria with Samson Omale. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, Jackson. We begin the sport in Egypt, where the coach of the Egyptian national football team, Ahab Galal, has been sacked. The sacking of the coach on Thursday is coming barely 2 months after he took over from Carlos Queiroz. Egyptian Football Federation official Hazim Imam told the press conference in Cairo that the negative results of the Egyptian coach precipitated his departure. Imam also said the names of a number of foreign coaches are being considered with a view to starting negotiations with them. Egypt, without injured captain Mohamed Salah and several other key players, were beaten 2-0 by Ethiopia last Thursday in the 2023 African Cup of Nations qualifier. Egypt lost the last edition of the Cup of Nations to Senegal on penalties in the finals in February, and the following month fell to Senegal again in a shootout, this time in a 2022 World Cup playoff. From North Africa to East Africa, where Young Africans Sports Club are the 2021-2022 Tanzania Premier League champions. Coach Nasiruddin Nabi's side were declared champions on Wednesday night after picking a convincing 3-0 win against Coastal Union of Tonga in a match played at the Benjamin Mkapa Stadium in Dar es Salaam. In-form striker Fiston Mayele netted a brace while Chiku Usindi also got his name on the score sheet. To ensure Young Africans Sport Club did not have to postpone the celebrations, Young Africans, who last won the league title in 2017, have now accumulated 67 points from 27 matches played. Away from football news now, Formula One boss Stefano Domenicali is in South Africa for talks that could see the country's Kyalami circuit return to the Grand Prix calendar next year for the first time since 1993. The former Ferrari team boss, who took over the helm of Formula One last year, will meet representatives of the circuit north of Johannesburg with a sports keen to do a deal. Africa is the only continent other than Antarctica without a Formula One race, and Domenicali, who represents commercial rights holders, Liberty Media, has spoken of his desire to rectify that. Shooters from 15 countries are among those entered for this year's Kenya Open Level 3 Shotgun, slated for Shaba Range in Samburu this weekend. Among the countries listed for the event include China, Egypt, Ghana, Spain, Italy, Zambia, and Senegal. The championship has attracted over 100 entries and will be based on the rules and regulations of the International Practical Shooting Confederation. The championship will be used to prepare Kenyans for the World Championships slated for Thailand later in the year. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great weekend ahead, Africa.